Hello, and welcome back to Pirated Radio. So, to sort of give you a bit of a backstory as to what this episode is, because it's not sort of one of my normal ones, I've been playing around a lot recently with a website called ChatGPT, which is an AI sort of chat thingy. I don't know, you sort of type into it and it talks back to you. If you want to look it up online, if you don't know what it is, you know, there's a load of stuff on it online. I do not have enough research or anything to really go into detail about it. But I was using it and talking to it, and I had the idea that maybe you could get it to sort of pretend to be someone else for an interview. And the first person that came to mind was the legendary Swiss graphic designer Joseph Mueller-Brockmann. And then another thing that I've been playing around with recently is this thing from a studio called 11 Labs, which allows you to clone people's voices. You can give it like a minute long clip and it will sort of chop up your voice and then spit out a clone that you can use, and you can type words into it and it will answer back in the person's voice. So obviously if you can combine these two, you can ask the first website to pretend it's Joseph Mueller-Brockmann. And then you can get the second website to get the answers, repeat the answers back in his voice for yourself. And obviously it will sound like him. So that's what I did in theory. A little bit more, I don't know how to intro this really, but a little bit more of a breakdown. So I used something called, Adobe are coming out with like a podcast tool. And I used this Adobe podcast tool to sort of get this audio clip of Mueller-Brockmann talking and sort of make it better. I'll run it on this as well, because I don't know if this sounds any different, but I'm not actually using my microphone that I normally use. I'm just recording it straight to my computer. So I might rerun it on this, I'm unsure. Well, I'm telling you, I don't know, it makes no difference. But so here is just another little bit. This is Adobe's podcast tool. So I'm going to play you a clip of Joseph Mueller-Brockmann talking.
This is behalf of this one, and this behalf of this, and this behalf of this here. So everything is here more or less intellectual, constructive done.
And that's sort of the raw and edited clip from a talk he gave at a university. And then this is it run through the Adobe tool, which makes it, I believe it removes background noise and such.
This is behalf of this one, and this behalf of this, and this behalf of this here. So everything is here more or less intellectual, constructive done.
And you can obviously tell the difference, which is another thing that I've been playing around with. So yeah, this is a very AI-horrific episode. To clarify again, what I've done is I've asked an AI to pretend to be Joseph Mueller-Brockmann. I've then asked it questions that I'd normally ask people on my podcast. And then I've got another AI to essentially clone his voice, which doesn't sound exactly like him. It's sort of, AI is something that's obviously still very much on the precipice of itself. And, you know, in years to come, it will jump leaps and bounds from what it even is now, even what it was before this. You know, the leaps from a couple of years ago to now is astonishing. Just sort of to clarify, I don't understand the ethical implications of anything like this. If anybody is listening to this who is from sort of the Mueller-Brockmann estate or anything like that, who wants me to take this down, that's fine. You can message me on various, you know, social media platforms. You get in touch with me through my website, that's completely fine, and I'll just take it down. This is in theory me talking to Joseph Mueller-Brockmann, or at least talking to an AI that is pretending to be Joseph Mueller-Brockmann. So yeah, enjoy. So for the people listening who maybe don't know yourself, and if you are, don't listen, why are you listening to this to begin with? But for the people listening that maybe don't know yourself, can you give them a little bit of a rundown as to who you are and what you do?
Certainly. My name is Josef Müller Brockmann, and I was a Swiss graphic designer who lived from 1914 to 1996. I'm perhaps best known for my work in the field of Swiss style, which is also known as the international typographic style. Along with other designers such as Max Bill and Richard Paul Loos, I helped to pioneer this style, which emphasized simplicity, clarity, and objectivity in graphic design. I worked in a variety of media, including posters, book covers, and logos. Some of my most famous works include my posters for the Zurich Town Hall and the Zurich Tonal, as well as my book Grid Systems in Graphic Design, which is still used as a reference by designers around the world. Throughout my career, I believed that design should be functional and serve a purpose beyond just looking pretty. I was interested in creating designs that were clear, concise, and easy to understand, and I believed that good design could help to make the world a better place.
So, would it be safe to say that design is something that you've been interested in from sort of an early age?
Yes, actually, design has always been a part of my life. As a child, I was interested in drawing, painting, and calligraphy, and I developed a keen eye for composition and balance. I was fascinated by the power of images and typography to convey ideas and communicate messages, and I knew from a young age that I wanted to be a graphic designer. After completing my schooling, I enrolled in the Zurich School of Arts and Crafts, where I studied under the famous designer and typographer Ernst Keller. This was a formative experience for me, as Keller instilled in me a love of simplicity and a deep understanding of the principles of visual communication. From there, I went on to start my own design studio and began working on a variety of projects in a range of media, from posters to corporate identities.
Am I right in believing that psychology was something you were interested in from an early age as well?
Yes, that's correct. Psychology has always been a source of fascination for me. I was particularly interested in the ways that people perceive and interpret information and how this can be leveraged in design to create more effective visual communication. As a designer, I believe it's important to have an understanding of human behavior and cognition. This understanding can help us to create designs that are more effective and engaging by taking into account the way that people see, process, and respond to visual stimuli. In my work, I often use psychological principles such as figure-ground relationships, gestalt theory, and visual hierarchy to create designs that were easy to understand and visually compelling. I believe that by understanding how the mind works, we can create designs that not only look good, but that also communicate effectively and help people to achieve their goals.
And I read online that you would study people's handwriting and it would give you a good breakdown as to who they were as a person.
Yes, that's correct. As a young designer, I was interested in graphology and would often analyze people's handwriting as a way of getting to know them. I believe that handwriting could reveal a lot about a person's personality and traits, and that this knowledge could be useful in understanding how to communicate effectively with them. However, as I gained more experience as a designer, I realized that relying too much on graphology could be problematic. I found that it could give me preconceptions about my clients and influence the way that I approached a project. I also recognized that it was not a reliable or scientific method of understanding people, and that it was more important to focus on building a strong working relationship with my clients based on trust, communication, and collaboration. So, while my interest in graphology remained, I phased it out as a primary tool in my design process. Instead, I focused on developing a deep understanding of my clients' needs and goals and worked closely with them to create designs that were effective, impactful, and reflective of their vision.
So to bring things together, would you conclude that sort of your formative years were sort of a big influence on, you know, your career as a whole?
Absolutely. My formative years were instrumental in shaping my approach to design and the visual language that would become the hallmark of my career. At the Zurich School of Arts and Crafts, I was exposed to the principles of modernism and the importance of functionality in design. I was also introduced to the grid system, which would become a key tool in my design process. In addition to my formal education, I was also heavily influenced by the work of other designers and artists, both from Switzerland and around the world. I was particularly drawn to the work of designers such as Theo Balmer and Max Bill, as well as the artists Pierre Mondrian and Kazimir Malevich. Their use of simple forms, bold colors, and geometric shapes helped to inform my own work and inspired me to explore new ways of communicating ideas through design. All of these experiences helped to shape the visual language that would become synonymous with my work, characterized by a clean, minimalist aesthetic, a strong use of typography, and an emphasis on clarity and functionality.
Oh, I actually thought you invented the grid system. Is that not the case?
No, I did not invent the grid system, but I did help to popularize its use in graphic design. The use of grids in design dates back to ancient times, and the concept of dividing a page into columns and rows for layout purposes has been used by artists, architects, and designers for centuries. In the 20th century, however, designers such as Jan Skytholt, Theo Balmer, and Max Bill began to explore the use of grids in a more systematic and structured way. In the late 1940s and early 1950s, I began to use the grid system in my own work, and I became one of its most vocal proponents in my book Grid Systems in Graphic Design, which was first published in 1961. I presented a comprehensive guide to using grids in design and laid out the principles of what would become known as the international typographic style. Through my work and my writing, I helped to popularize the use of the grids in design and showed how they could be used to create layouts that were clear, organized, and easy to read. Today, the grid system remains an important tool in graphic design, and many designers continue to use it as a fundamental element of their practice.
So I'm jumping forward to your time sort of after education. Am I right in believing you apprenticed?
Yes, that's correct. After completing my formal education at the Zurich School of Arts and Crafts, I began my professional career by apprenticing under Walter Diggelmann, who was a well-known graphic designer at the time. During my apprenticeship, I worked on a variety of projects, including book covers, posters, and exhibition designs. This experience was invaluable to me as it gave me the opportunity to learn from a seasoned professional and develop my own skills as a designer. One of the most important things I learned from Diggelmann was the importance of functionality and simplicity in design. He taught me to focus on the essentials of a design and to eliminate anything that was unnecessary or distracting. This lesson stayed with me throughout my career and became a key principle of the Swiss style that I helped to develop.
We've discussed sort of Swiss style things a little bit, I believe, already. Am I right in also believing that this sort of minimalistic style that would become the Swiss style eventually, you didn't begin sort of playing around with it until sort of your 30s or possibly your 40s?
Yes, the style that I'm most well known for, which you are referring, did not emerge until I was in my 40s. Before that, I was working as a designer and illustrator in a more traditional style, and it wasn't until I began to experiment with grid systems and typography that my work started to take on the more minimalist and structured style for which I am now known. As a designer, I have always been interested in the role that visual communication can play in conveying complex information in a clear and concise manner. In my earlier years, I experimented with different styles and approaches, including traditional illustration and graphic design techniques. However, I found that these styles often tended to be overly decorative and did not effectively communicate the intended message. It was during my time as a teacher at the Zurich School of Arts and Crafts in the late 1940s that I began to explore the use of grid systems as a tool for organizing and presenting information. I saw this approach as a way to simplify and clarify complex information and to create a more systematic and objective approach to design. This led me to develop a more minimalist and structured style that focused on using typography and simple geometric forms to create effective and efficient visual communication. So, it was a combination of my interest in visual communication and my experimentation with grid systems that led me to abandon my earlier illustrative style and embrace a more minimalist and functional approach to design.
You mentioned typography earlier on, I believe. Can I ask what your favorite typeface is?
As a designer, I believe that the choice of typeface should always be driven by the specific needs of the project and the message that the design is trying to communicate. That being said, I have always had a deep appreciation for simple and timeless typefaces that are easy to read and adaptable to a variety of design contexts. One of my favorite typefaces, and one that I used frequently in my work, is Accidents Grotesque. This typeface was created in 1896 by the Berthold Type Foundry in Berlin, and it became popular in the early 20th century for its clean lines, neutral appearance, and wide range of weights and styles. That being said, I never limited myself to just one typeface and always selected the typeface that was most appropriate for the project at hand. Typography was a fundamental part of my design process, and I spent a lot of time experimenting with different typefaces and layouts to find the perfect combination for each project.
So I asked this to every person now, and I didn't originally when I first started this, but it's sort of an idea that I got a sort of midway through started doing these podcasts. And it's just the idea of, if you could only pick one thing which has been sort of the heartbeat of your own career and inspired you the most, a piece of music, a book, a painting, whatever you want really, what would that be for yourself?
If I had to pick just one thing that has inspired me most in my career, it would be the work of the Bauhaus movement. The Bauhaus was a school of design that emphasized simplicity, functionality, and craftsmanship, and it had a profound impact on the development of modern design. The Bauhaus designers were not afraid to experiment with new materials and technologies, and they sought to create designs that were both aesthetically pleasing and practical. The Bauhaus principles were a major influence on my own work, particularly in the development of the grid system, which is based on the principles of order and structure. The Bauhaus approach to design also encouraged a collaborative and interdisciplinary approach, which is something that I have always tried to emulate in my own work. So I would say that the Bauhaus has been the biggest source of inspiration for me throughout my career.
Would you say that the idea of interdisciplinary design is something that you hold dear to your heart then?
Yes, the idea of interdisciplinary work has always been inspiring to me as a designer. I believe that design is not just about creating beautiful images or objects, but about solving problems and communicating ideas in a way that is clear, effective, and engaging. In order to do this, designers need to be able to collaborate with experts from a wide range of fields, including science, engineering, business, and the arts. By working with other experts, designers can gain new insights and perspectives that can help them to develop more effective solutions to complex problems. They can also learn new techniques and methods that can help them to create work that is more innovative, dynamic, and impactful. As a designer, I have always tried to be open to new ideas and perspectives, and to seek out opportunities to collaborate with others who share my passion for design. I believe that this kind of interdisciplinary work is essential for pushing the boundaries of design and for creating work that truly makes a difference in the world.
Can I ask you what your favorite project that you completed was?
As a designer, I have always been more interested in the process of design than the final product. For me, the most satisfying aspect of design is the problem-solving process and the creative exploration that goes into finding the best solution for a given project. That being said, there are a few projects that hold a special place in my heart. One of these is a poster that I created in 1955 for the Zurich Town Hall. The poster was part of a larger campaign to promote a series of concerts that were being held in the city, and it featured a simple striking design that used bold typography and geometric shapes to convey the information. The poster was a departure from the more decorative and ornate designs that were popular at the time, and it helped to establish the clean, modern look that would come to define the Swiss style. I was particularly proud of this design because it was able to communicate the information in a clear and concise manner while also capturing the essence of the event and creating a sense of excitement and anticipation.
You also helped to sort of create the graphic, I believe it said, whether that's wrong, I don't know. which was a magazine about graphic design and sort of pushing the boundaries, as I understand. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Certainly. Firstly, it's pronounced Nouveau Graphique. In English, I believe you call it New Graphic Design. But yes, definitely one of the most important projects of my career was the creation of the magazine. The idea behind the magazine was to create a platform for the discussion and promotion of the Swiss style and other modernist design movements. Each issue featured articles, essays, and visual examples of the latest developments in graphic design, typography, and advertising. The magazine was a major influence on the development of the Swiss style and helped to establish it as a dominant force in graphic design in the 1960s and beyond. It was also an important platform for me to share my own work and ideas, as well as to showcase the work of other designers who were pushing the boundaries of the field. The magazine was notable for its clean, structured layout and use of a strict grid system, which became a hallmark of the Swiss style. The typography was also carefully chosen to be functional and legible, with a focus on clarity and simplicity. Overall, Neue Grafik was an important example of how design can be used to promote new ideas and to create a community of like-minded practitioners who are dedicated to pushing the boundaries of the field.
If you could give a piece of advice to students that are looking to build a portfolio of design, having graduated sort of education, do you have anything that you'd say to them?
As a designer, my advice to students looking to develop portfolios would be to focus on creating a diverse range of work that showcases your skills and abilities across different mediums and contexts. It's important to demonstrate your ability to solve design problems and to communicate ideas effectively through your work. I would also suggest focusing on quality over quantity. Instead of creating a large number of mediocre pieces, it's better to create a smaller number of well-executed, thoughtful pieces that really showcase your design abilities. Additionally, I would encourage students to seek out feedback and criticism from other designers and professionals. This can be incredibly valuable in helping you to identify areas for improvement and to grow as a designer. Finally, don't be afraid to take risks and try new things. Design is an ever-evolving field, and the best designers are those who are willing to take risks and explore new techniques and approaches.
And last but not least, I ask this to every guest. If you go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice to yourself in your younger years, knowing what you know now, what would that be?
If I could go back in time and give myself one piece of advice, it would be to always stay true to my design principles and to never compromise on quality. Throughout my career, I have always tried to maintain a high standard of design and to communicate messages as effectively as possible. However, there were times when I had to compromise on my vision in order to meet a client's demands or to work within a specific budget. Looking back, I realize that these compromises may have had a negative impact on the effectiveness of the final design, and I wish that I had been more steadfast in my commitment to quality. So my advice to myself would be to always prioritize design quality and to never compromise on my principles.
Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Brockman.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to share my thoughts with you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on your podcast.
Hello. As ever, I hope you enjoyed that. Got some insight. Obviously, there's sort of shortcomings to a lot of it because the answers in a lot of cases are quite 2D in a sense, because it's obviously the AI is just looking on the internet and then regurgitating information that it finds on there, so it can't give like a personalized answer. As I was doing it, it kind of broke a couple of times and I had to cut questions out where it resorted back to just being the AI as opposed to pretending to be Mueller Brockman. And it just sort of, like, I'd ask it a question about, I asked it about designers that it was a fan of, and it regurgitated something like, I'm not, you know, as an AI, I can't answer that, or something along those lines. But obviously that's the sort of parameters in place with ChatGPT. What is it to say? I don't even know what else to say. I hope you enjoyed, and I shall see you next time.